Horrible news out of Waterbury this morning. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR right now. Police Chief Fernando Spagnola from Waterbury on the show. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you guys? Morning.
Good. Thanks for what you do, and you've been doing a great job with the Waterbury Police Department. You have a great force.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, wonderful people I work with each and every day.
Waterbury gets a bad rap.
Shouldn't.
We do. It's a great place, man.
It really does. It really is.
Well, you know what happens? A story like the one we're talking about this morning gets all the headlines, and all the good things about Waterbury get no headlines.
Buried, yep.
Yeah, very true. Well, we'll have to come in and talk about those someday.
You're always welcome here, sir.
Feel free.
You're going to remember for the rest of your life when you heard about this story. Where were you?
Oh, I got a phone call. I was working, and, the detectives and investigators started to lay out what their suspicions were based on the initial reports and their initial observations at the scene. And I'll be honest, all of us got together for a quick meeting and to talk to the state's attorney briefly after the fire occurred. And we were in shock. It was really unbelievable. We were just saying to ourselves, we must be missing something here. And it just as it evolved, we realized how horrific this incident actually was.
Give us like a short version of the overview of this story.
So the victim started a fire in the house on Blake Street here in Waterbury in an effort to bring attention to the situation. When we had an opportunity to first meet with him, he was very unkempt. He had a lot of medical conditions, emaciated, some significant dental problems. The poor kid is 5'9" old, about 68 pounds. And he began to explain to us that he had been held captive in the house since he was 11 years old, for nearly 20 years. We started conducting interviews and brought some behavioral health specialists in and started applying for search warrants to collect evidence at the fire scene and to look at medical records. And, you know, his story became more and more obvious that he was telling the truth. It really is heart-wrenching. It's hard to talk about a little bit.
It is.
This 33 years in law enforcement, this is absolutely the worst treatment of the humanity that I've ever seen. And to think that it was by a family member is just frankly disgusting. We had looked into a lot of different aspects of his life best we could. His natural father had passed not that long ago. So there were some dead ends there, but we've been interviewing other family members to try to really piece this whole scenario together.
And where were they during this whole period?
So it's difficult. You know, it seems as if there was a lot of shielding of the situation. Dare to say a lot of control by the suspect, Kimberly Sullivan, in this particular case, on keeping away the conditions of the victim and what was going on in that household to other family members.
They say since 11 he's been held captive. So I'm guessing that's when the father got divorced from the mother, and then he moves in with the stepmom. Is that what happened?
Not exactly sure about that. No, the stepmom was with the father up until his death recently, the other way around. So he, you know, there were some reports back in 2005 from DCF and the Education Department, some concerns arisen by the school district about, food gathering at school. The kid was kind of rummaging through trash cans and always asking for food. And when we went back to the interviews with the victim, he had made it clear that, he was rationed, 2 cups of water a day, at times recalled drinking out of the toilet to quench his thirst because of the lack of water, received 2 sandwiches a day of poor nutrient substance, and just, was doing what he had to do to survive. it appears that, you know, he was taken out of school and homeschooled right around that era, 2005, 2006. And really, I think that as far as the system is concerned, he was lost track of at that point, and, you know, continued to live this life of captivity up until he wanted to make a statement and did whatever he had to do to get free.
What happened to the original mother?
I don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head. I'm sure that the investigators have some information on that, but I'm not aware of it.
So my guess is that somewhere around 11, he moved in with his father, and it sounds like his father was never really great.
No, to begin with.
It doesn't sound like his dad did him any favors.
No.
You know, he was, you know, when you talk about this, I can't even compare it to people in the care of the Department of Corrections here in the state. It's like talking about that movie Papillon, right? I mean, it's just the kid is like allowed out of his room for a limited period of time each and every day. And, you know, he did say that, you know, although his dad didn't seem to do him any favors, when the stepmom wasn't around, you know, he would allow him out of the room maybe a little bit more. But, you know, the picture is painted that, you know, there's a lot of fear about him getting in trouble or what the consequences would be if too much freedom was provided to him or too much assistance was provided to him by family members and other siblings that happened to be in the house at that time.
Did you interview him personally, Chief?
I did not. No. My investigators that were on scene built an incredible rapport. And I would say that, you know, Detective Steve Brownell, Detective John Page did an incredible job building a rapport with him and, you know, continuing to support him. The entire Criminal Investigation Bureau, you know, continues to support him. They've helped him out, bought him some items to try to keep him comfortable.
Oh, good.
Yeah, really trying to support him in his pathway to healing.
I saw that he would listen to a radio that was outside his room to kind of keep up on what's going on in the news and what day and year it was.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it was so primitive, right? A lot of the descriptions of how he had to live his life and the means that he had to go to just stay up to date on current events and just to support his basic needs, like going to the bathroom, they were just incredible. And, you know, the room that he was held captive in was really like a jail cell. It was in a gabled part of the house. You know, once you put a bed and a bookshelf in there, it was maybe a, you know, a 3-foot by 8-foot swath of open space he had to move around in.
Man, where is he now?
He's you know, in the process of getting treatment and healing. He's at an undisclosed location at this time.
Gotcha. Well, great job by the police department.
Absolutely.
And my God, it's hard to believe 20 years.
Right.
It is, right. It's hard to believe. It's hard to even find words to describe it. It's incredible.
When you think you saw it all.
You guys having a press conference today?
We are. We're having a press conference at 9:30 today at police headquarters. The state's attorney will be there along with the mayor, Mayor Turnerowski of Waterbury. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about this. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of questions really from around the world about this particular case. And so we figured we'd collectively try to get as much information out as we can.
The big one's going to be how did DCF get called twice by the school system and then just never get a knock on the door get eyeballs on him?
Yeah, a little welfare check.
Well, I think there was some work done at that point in time. You know, what the results, the end results were, I don't have with me right now. But there was physical contact made back in 05, 06, and this was prior to this long stint of captivity. But it does sound like, you know, the abuse, the neglect and the abuse was beginning at that point in time.
Was there any talk of physical abuse? Of course, there's mental abuse and
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, just by the nature of the conditions he was kept in and he was forced under would constitute physical abuse.
Right.
His body certainly shows that in a number of different ways.
Yeah.
Well, great job by the police department. Look forward to getting more details on this. And,
yes.
I look forward to hearing about his recovery.
Exactly.
Great. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for your support of all the police. And, you know, you're really good to Waterbury, and we'll never forget you. Thank you.
Thank you, Police Chief Fernando Spagnuolo. And what a horrible story to wake up to. A Waterbury woman arrested for allegedly holding her stepson captive for over 20 years.
That's messed up.
Brian Foley's on the show now. What's your take on this?
Good morning, guys. So we had one of these in Hartford in 2017, and this kid, the same, almost identical circumstances that this kid had autism in Hartford. This Waterbury situation is so unique in that, you know, and you guys, I know I talked to Spags, the police chief in Waterbury this morning. I talked to him as well. The kid doesn't, well, I mean, beyond what he's got now, did not have any, you know, real mental incapacities to get here. And I'm certain the mom did. You know, I look at the mother and or stepmother, and to lock a child in the room for 20 years and, you know, not even regular bathroom stuff. I mean, I don't know if Spags explained how the kid had to go to the bathroom through like a soda bottle and straws out the window. It's just a sick situation. But Chaz, look at her mugshot that you see, and look at they show her walking into the police station.
Yeah.
She's dressed nice. She has makeup on. So this is not, and looks normal. She's going to do time because, you know, she's going to have to, and she's of course denying it. The lawyer's saying she's denying it, and this is all alleged. But you know, when you got 20 years of zero doctor bills and the kid's 64 pounds, or the guy's 64 pounds, zero any sort of
5'9",
yeah,
32 years old.
Yep.
I heard 68, but between 64 and 68 pounds.
That's a bone.
Yeah, ours, the one in Hartford, that kid was 5'9", 17 years old, 84 pounds, and he died. So this person in Waterbury's, you know, lucky to be alive. I'm sure he doesn't feel very lucky, but a good job by the Waterbury cops. That is a really good police department. They do a great job.
They dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's.
Yeah, if you read the warrant, it's tight. Yeah, and that is a busy, great police department, and they've had a busy couple months. That chief down there, do you know that Gail King asked him to go on this morning, and he said no for you guys.
Really?
Is that right?
Yep. Wow,
that's true. True story. Yeah, he told me this morning.
Holy crap!
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, he's a good guy like that. He's regular people.
Well, I love the Waterbury Police Department. See, Brian Foley wouldn't do that.
Right.
He would call and say, "Hey, man, Fox News just called. I gotta move
goodbye.
You guys.
They send a car.
He'd be like, goodbye. They're sending a car. We'll have to call you after 7 o'clock.
They got a mug of my name on it. No, right. My God, you know, I got to keep it.
Right.
AJ. Wait, I called you guys on the way. The Secret Service was listening.
That's right. I kid.
All right, no Hollywood for you.
Yeah. Yeah, man, this is you know, if a person treated a dog like this, it would be national news.
Yeah.
This is horrific. Like I hope they never publish pictures of him.
Yeah.
And whoever sits on the jury will have to see some very disturbing pictures, because to see this, you know, someone said, you know, he looked like he walked out of a death camp in World War II.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine what that 64, 68 pounds
horrific
looks like on a 5'9" human being.
Scary.
In these scenarios, restraints are not needed. They have malnourished the person to a point where they could not escape. They are absolutely and completely helpless. Helpless to get up and even, you know, just to do normal things. And was given like an hour a day to get up and walk around. And the house is a cape, and, you know, a standard cape that you'd see built around any of these the cities about the age of Waterbury. You know, those 1950s capes where the upstairs room, those dormer rooms, which are tight with the ceilings angled in, got a bed in it, you know, an 8x9 room with a bed in it. Now you're chewing up a lot of space. So this kid did not have, I say kid, you know, he was a kid when he got put in there.
Right.
That's why I keep referring to him as such. Not a lot of room. And so that's the physical incapacities that she put on him made restraints completely unnecessary. He wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. Man.
Terrible.
Really? I mean, beyond. I don't think words can describe how horrible
seriously
this kid's life has been. But luckily, you know, for him to light that fire using hand sanitizer and paper to get out of there.
Yeah.
He put himself at risk. He went into the hospital in serious condition with smoke inhalation. He could have died in the
fire. That tells you the desperation.
That tells you the desperation.
Yeah. Peak desperation.
I mean, when's the movie? There's going to be a movie. I mean, there has to be. That this is, and the girl that looked the next door that looked up and saw the kid in the window, and she, you know, convinced herself that she probably imagined the whole thing, you know, years later. It's incredible.
Well, DCF called several times on him, so they take him out of school because they just don't want DCF knocking on the door anymore.
Yeah.
How does DCF get uninvolved, and how do they not knock on the door to get eyes on that kid? Those are questions that need to be answered.
Follow-up,
I asked Spags, and so that they will look at that. My guess, he aged out of their system. Mm-hmm. The benefit is, you know, like with us in Hartford, one, the kid was nonverbal autistic, but he passed away, and our only evidence was what the medical examiner. This is a living, you know, guy now. He can talk, and he's going to be able to explain a whole heck of a lot.
Right.
You know, she's going to sit. I mean, this is going to be 20, 30 years that she's going to have to sit. Now it's her turn.
Yeah, being in
now room. It's her turn. That is a headline.
Yep.
Now it's her turn.
The judge is going to use that when he or she hits the gavel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Brian, thanks for coming on.